morning. This is Bruce Campbell. You are listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Listen up, or I'll take you out.
Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right, Fat Guys.
Kevin's very proud of being fat.
I'm just trying to bring some excitement to the show.
Yep, and on this week's show, we are we're becoming super spies. That's all
That
matters. That's all you need to know is that we are going to be fat super spies and talk about nothing but James Bond the whole way through the episode.
We're going to be sneaking around in the shadows. We may be in your closet right now as we speak.
And Kevin's probably not wearing any pants.
I'm wearing pants today.
Really?
Yeah.
Look at that.
Well, a spy must wear pants, unless you're coming out of the ocean like Daniel Craig in Casino Royale in your sort of tribute to Dr. No.
Right.
Which I've done that, and usually people just scatter. No one clears a beach faster than I do than when I'm in a Speedo.
Your James Bond moment didn't work out so well?
No, it didn't.
All right, cool. Well, also, as you heard, we're going to be talking later in the show. Kevin talked to Bruce Campbell about his My Name is Bruce tour, so stay tuned for that. And yeah, so we're going to review Quantum of Solace. But before we get to all that, we've got some information for you on where you can get a hold of us. You can get us over at fatguysthemovies.com. You can get us on iTunes. Just go to the iTunes store, search Fat Guys the Movies, and make sure you leave a review. Once you listen to one of our better episodes, go back and then give the entire span of our run a
bite your tongue, Neil Miller. Every episode is a great episode of Fat Guys at the Movies. That's all there is to it.
Sure. And if you'd like to email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or leave us a voicemail at 614-388-8735. We haven't gotten any voicemails in the last 2 weeks, so.
Are you sure?
I'm sure. The virtual studio in the sky is run through the same program that that we get the voicemails through, so I can assure you no one is calling.
Or so if they're calling. We've offended Dawn from California, probably, by this
time. Yeah, I wonder what it was that finally got her.
Yeah. It was because we had to defend our use of the preemptive suck grade.
Yeah, like 3 weeks in a row. Would we like to defend it again this week?
No.
For kicks?
We need to move on.
Okay.
We need to talk about James Bond. Because there's nothing else coming out in the theaters.
Right. We're going to spend 3 full segments talking about James Bond and the new movie, Quantum of Solace, and those, you know, all those old movies. There's 20 of them. 21 other ones. So
there's 22 other ones.
There's 22 total.
I think.
No, there's 22 total. This is the 22nd James
this
Bond.
This is the 22nd. That's right. And then, but Never Say Never Again was outside of the canon, as was the original Casino Royale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Well, you want to introduce this one since you have all your facts straight?
Sure. First movie up, and the only movie up, Quantum of Solace. Daniel Craig is back as James Bond in this high-energy sequel to the 2006 hit Casino Royale.
He'd be a pretty cold bastard who didn't want revenge for the death of someone he loved.
I don't think the dead care about vengeance. This man and I have some unfinished business.
The first thing you should know about us is that we have people everywhere.
What the hell is this organization, Bond? How can they be everywhere and we know nothing about them?
This is the world's most precious resource. We need to control as much of it as we can.
Main check, Dominic Green.
He's a person of extreme interest.
We've already begun destabilizing the government.
You know who Green is, and you want to put us in bed with him.
Yeah, you're right. We should just deal with nice people.
Get in.
All right.
Careful with this one, Mr. Bond. She won't go to bed with you unless you give her something she really wants.
I think someone wants to kill you.
You two do make a charming couple, though. You're both, what's the expression? Damaged goods.
Now, first, before we review this, did you like Casino Royale?
I did. I think it's definitely up in my list of favorite Bond movies. But it, you know, the one thing I liked about it is it kind of you know, the way it rebooted the character and kind of showed us the origins of Bond, and it had enough action in it. But the only thing I didn't like about Casino Royale was it was a little long, which
well, they tend to be long. A lot of them are.
They are, yeah, and that's the only thing I've ever had against Bond movies is that I have total ADD, so yeah. It's very difficult. I mean, I just reviewed all six of those old school Bond movies that came to Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And that was the most arduous process I've ever had to go through to watch movies.
When Die Another Day came out, I got together all the Bond movies and I watched all of the Bond movies, every single one, including Never Say Never Again and Casino Royale, which was, at that time, Die Another Day was the number 20. So I watched something like 20 some movies. It was over the course of like several weeks. I mean, it wasn't like in a weekend.
You didn't just sit and watch them straight through? Because that's what I would have done.
Yeah, well, it's rough to go through all of them straight through because they do get they're repetitious at times. But most of them are over 2 hours. There's only like five or six that are like less than 2 hours.
Right, but this one's the shortest one of the bunch.
Yeah, and which I think works for it. Well, first I want to hear what your thoughts are on it because we attended the screening together, and your impression after we walked out was you kind of liked it, but you were disturbed that I kind of agreed with you.
Well, that, and I was disturbed that everyone else seemed to disagree with us in the normal group of Columbus film critics. And I think there's a lot of things that people can kind of pick at here. Number one being plot development. It feels like there is something missing. It feels like the movie just kind of like skips ahead from action sequence to action sequence without ever taking the time to kind of, you know, weave together the plot. Similar to, and really that expectation was set so high by how much Casino Royale did with developing its plot. Mm-hmm. You know, there was, you know, most of it took place sitting at a poker table talking, you know?
Yeah. Well, a good chunk of it.
And this one seems to be less of that, more action, which for me as a reformed adrenaline junkie, that's awesome. You know, that's exactly what I want. And similar to the way I felt about The Dark Knight, you know, that you have a second movie of a rebooted franchise. The character is in full form. I think this is the best Bond has ever been as far as Daniel Craig as James Bond, you know, in his full badass form. You know, just chasing out bad guys and beating them up and shooting people and all this good stuff. But I think that there will be some diehard Bond fans who like that 2.5 hour meaty, you know, plot thick movie that this one isn't that. It's just more action. And, you know, frankly, I enjoyed the heck out of it. So.
Well, it was a simpler motivation because what I found the most sort of like disjointed about it. I mean, in general, I really enjoyed it. There are only two complaints I had. One was it was a little disjointed because the focus of Bond is revenge. He wants to go after the people who were responsible for Vesper's death, and he kind of stumbles into this giant global conspiracy, which he goes after, but he's kind of like, well, yeah, but I just want to get him because they killed my girlfriend kind of thing.
Right.
But it does sort of due diligence to have the villain with the crazy evil plot, and so it does feel a little disjointed, but I thought it was forgivable considering it at least made sense, especially if you should see Casino Royale shortly before you see this because there's a lot of pretext you need. My only other complaint is that they did strip out a couple traditional Bond moments. They really don't have the theme in there. They don't have the Bond, James Bond thing. And you know, not to be too nitpicky about that, but I like that. I like it. There's a certain comfort to that, which they do that all the time, though. Whenever they switch Bonds, they did that with Roger Moore. He orders bourbon in a bar, and the martini's not the traditional thing from the book.
Right.
But ultimately, I thought this was a lot of action, a lot of fun. I thought Daniel Craig embodied Bond as well as he did in the first movie. So I thought it was a worthy successor, but it wasn't as good as Casino Royale. But then again, I don't know if anything could be. In terms of Bond movies, Casino Royale was so well done.
Right.
So, but I think it rocked.
I also think it rocked. And even as I'm, you know, I don't know. We'll talk more about it in the next segment. But I'm saying rocks. And
that's
when
right.
When we come back, I'll explain more of why. Hey And we're back, and I have more to say about this Quantum of Solace movie. There's two things I think, one that bothered me and one that I think that will bother other people. And the one that will bother other people is what you brought up, is it does lack a lot of those Bond moments, a lot of those iconic Bond things that exist. But, you know, it really didn't bother me because it feels like a different character. But it also still has that sense of nostalgia around it. But Daniel Craig, it feels like they really have reinvented Bond. Whereas like Roger Moore and Pierce Brosnan and they just felt like different versions of the Connery Bond.
Well,
this one feels like a new Bond.
You kind of have to see, there's a real interesting thing about Roger Moore. And let me just take a section to say this. If you go back and watch Live and Let Die, he is a very different Bond than he was in A View to a Kill. I mean, you're talking, what was it, like 15, 16 years difference between the two movies,
right,
and he did so many of them. He really is a much more stoic Bond in Live and Let Die, whereas, you know, as he got later on, he kind of gets a little goofy and campy, which, you know, it depends on... What I found with Bond, people who like Bond, they go with the Bond that they were introduced with. Like I was talking to a guy at a video store, and he was a younger guy, and he's like, well, I always liked Timothy Dalton because that's the first one I saw. The first movie he saw was like The Living Daylights. And of course, you know, that's the one he's going to like because that's what Bond was to him. The first one I ever saw was Moonraker. Mm-hmm. So I'll always picture Roger Moore as Bond. And even when I was a kid watching the movies on TV, whenever a Sean Connery Bond came on, I'm like, nah, who's that guy? He's not Bond.
The second point I wanted to make was the theme song.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrible. Absolutely terrible. Terrible, 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 terrible. I hate you, Jack White and Alicia Keys. And here's the reason why. Is the beat is awesome. It really kind of fits that, you know, some of the cooler Bond themes. But the chorus of them singing over each other was absolutely atrocious. And it really, before the movie even got going, I was mad at the theme song. So I just think it, by far one of the worst Bond theme songs. But literally, if you take out one vocal track, like if you were to take out Jack White's.
Jack, that would be hilarious.
If you take out Jack White's vocal track out of that, it's probably like one of the best.
Wouldn't it be awesome to have Jack Black do the end? It'd be like, you know, have the big opening sequence, dun 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 ba da bum bum, and they have him go, skiddly dee doobly doo la 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 la. It's James Bond. He's the most awesome, awesomest of the awesome spies. Doo doo blah. That would be the
entire
song.
I think that would
song.
Be relatively humorous, yes. So I think that bothered me. But, you know, I was a big fan of the two Bond girls in this movie. And I think that actually kind of segues into our topics. We're going to do our little James Bond retrospective here.
Yes.
Talk about some of our favorites. Olga Kurylenko, total badass.
I love
Olga.
And
she's hot.
You know what I've learned is that she... Her best roles are where she's somehow physically scarred.
Mm.
Because she was all tatted up in the face in Hitman, and she was like super hot. And in this one, she has this giant. Well, it's a fire burn, but it looks like a Portuguese man of war was stuck on her back. Which I mean, like that's like in an adult film, putting glasses on the hot girl and being like, she's ugly, and you're kind of like looking, oh, here's totally ridiculously smoking hot Olga Kurylenko, but she has a scar on her back, so she's damaged goods.
Right.
And I'm like,
though most of us would happily purchase those.
Yeah, I'd pick that up.
Goods.
I'd pick that up on the scratch and dent aisle, no problem.
So Gemma Arterton I thought was good. Her role was relatively short lived, but
with an homage to Goldfinger,
with a great homage to Goldfinger, because that is one of my favorite Bond movies of all time. So
Goldfinger, you know,
Goldfinger, yeah. Well, and I love those little homages, like, you know, Halle Berry in
Die
Another Day, where she comes out and it's an homage to Honey Rider and Dr. No and stuff like that. I think it's great that the modern Bond films, since it is a franchise that's, you know, 22 films deep, it's great to see them going back to some of those originals. I mean, you wouldn't want the next Batman movie to reference Batman and Robin. because there was nothing great about Batman and Robin. But with the Bond films, there's so much nostalgia to be had.
Yeah.
So,
which is why Die Another Day was such a great movie to be made when it was, because it's something like got like 100 homages to it. It's got the Goldfinger right. chair where he's being zapped by the laser. It's got the Honey Rider montage. It's got the Aston Martin brought back. It's got so much
right.
that throws back to the old movies.
Yeah. So, but speaking of hot women.
Yes.
Our first topic of our thing is who's your favorite Bond girl?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to hear who your favorite Bond girl is.
You want me to go first?
I think we've already mentioned mine a couple of times.
Well, do you want to go ahead and put yours out there for the for
yeah,
the
mine is Honey Rider from Dr. No.
Okay.
What's her name?
Ursula Andress.
Ursula Andress from Dr. No.
The original.
She was something, man.
You know,
if I lived in the 60s, she would have been on my wall or something.
Well, you have another one, don't you?
I do. Do I?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Xenia Onatopp.
Xenia
from
Onatopp.
GoldenEye. Because there's nothing greater than watching a woman who really, truly gets off on killing people. I think that is, there's something very, very sexy about that. If I'm going to get murdered, mm-hmm. I would like to be murdered by somebody like that.
Well, you know,
officially.
Here's the thing. If I had to choose my death, mm-hmm. death by sex with Xenia Onatopp would be up there in the top five.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I
mean,
I don't think you'll find too many men who would disagree with you.
Yeah, if you have to check out, I'd be like, mm-hmm. that's how I want to do it.
Yep.
So,
but who's your favorite Bond girl?
Well, you know, I've got a couple I'm going to mention. I do have to say I love Olga Korolenko, but I mean, it's the new movie, so I don't want to put her in there. And I love Xenia Onatopp, and like I said, if I had to check out, that's where I'd go. But you know, probably my favorite would be Halle Berry. I thought she was a great Bond girl. She was sort of that modern Bond girl that kicks butt as well as is the damsel in distress. So yeah, I thought she did a great job. And they were actually thinking of giving her own movie at one point, but they never did. But the other one, I do want to give a little bit of a nod.
Then she did Catwoman.
That's true. I do want to give a little nod to Eunice Grayson. Sorry, I have trouble saying her name. If you don't know who she was Sylvia Trench, which was kind of Bond's at-home girlfriend in the first couple movies, Dr. No and From Russia with Love. She was a cute woman. It always started with him like on a date with her, and he's like, sorry, honey, I got to go save the world.
Right. Well, the first License to Kill, the first Moore movie, the one
Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die, the girl in the first scene. Who he stuffs in the closet. I think she was very hot. She's not a Bond girl. I mean, she was kind of a Bond girl. I mean, she was a girl in a Bond movie. Yes. But anyways. Moving on. Favorite Bond gadget. I got this one. This one's easy for me. Is the Aston Martin.
From Goldfinger?
There's the one from Goldfinger, and then the one from Die Another Day I thought was pretty wicked.
The one that can become invisible?
Yeah, that was pretty wicked. Although I will say that in Quantum of Solace, there's some cool gadgetry. The car is very cool in Quantum of Solace, but the phone system that they have at MI6 in Quantum of Solace is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
It's like the 24 phones.
Only they don't do that cool ring.
Yeah. Well, you know, I will give you the Aston Martin, and the invisibility of the Aston Martin was a little over the top, I thought. But
right.
I mean,
that's what got silly.
The original Aston Martin from Goldfinger was pretty slick, too.
Yeah, indeed.
But I also want to give Rosa Klebb's knife in the shoe. That's one of the most simple gadgets, mm-hmm. and this is from Russia with Love, where she uses the shoe and she kills people with her shoe, which is awesome.
Right. Yes. Right. Very cool. So, who throws a shoe?
Who throws a shoe? Honestly.
Who stabs with a shoe?
Yes.
All right. And finally, our last topic in our little James Bond. Of course, we're gonna do our favorite Bond movies in the next segment as part of our Fat Guy Five. But this one's rank the Bonds from 6 to 1. And I'll go first. Lazenby, because I've never even seen the Lazenby movie, so I can't even judge. But I heard it wasn't that good.
Lazenby was by far the worst Bond ever.
Yeah. Then I think the next one is a tie between Timothy Dalton and Pierce Brosnan, because they just both felt like the, I don't know, the saltine cracker version of Bond.
I'll give you that.
Not very memorable.
Yeah.
Then really another kind of tie between Daniel Craig and Roger Moore, because I felt like they were both kind of they really gave the character a new identity mm-hmm. both times. And then Sean Connery, because I'm a fan of the original. Like, Sean Connery is James Bond.
Yeah. Well, I mean, historically, you got to put Sean Connery as number one. But yeah, I don't disagree. I think I like Daniel Craig a little more than Roger Moore. But then again, I grew up with Roger Moore, so that's why I have such an affinity towards him as Bond.
Right. Cool. And you like Connery too?
Yeah. Well, Connery would have to be number one.
Of course. All right, cool. When we come back, we're going to talk about how much money this thing's going to make. Back, and next up we're going to take a little bit of a break from James Bond, which I know is not expected because we said at the top of the show that everything's going to be about James Bond, but this one has nothing to do with James Bond. We're going to do our indie spotlight.
We're actually going to do two breaks. We got another break in the internet only segment.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, Bruce Campbell. But yes. I mean, if there was a guy who I would have play an old American version of James Bond, Bruce Campbell, obviously.
They should remake the original Casino Royale television show with Bruce Campbell.
They should remake everything with Bruce Campbell and Peter Dinklage as partners.
That would be awesome. Peter Dinklage and James Bond. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Peter Dinklage as Mini Bond.
Do you hear me? Do you hear me? Do you hear us, Eon Productions? You must do this.
Okay. So, but our indie spotlight this week is Schenectady, New York.
Yes.
Which is from off-kilter writer Charlie Kaufman, directs his own script about a pathetic theater director's disconnection with reality.
I'm hurt. Am I dying? Can you tell me that?
I can't tell you.
You can't tell me?
No.
No, you can't tell me if you can't tell me.
No.
I'm lonely.
Yes. And?
I'm afraid I'm gonna die.
Anything else?
I don't know what's wrong with me, and I want to do something important while I'm still here.
That would be the time to do it, yes.
The idea is to do a massive theater piece.
Have I disappointed you somehow?
Everyone is disappointing. The more you know someone.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Knowing that you don't know is the most essential step to knowing, you know?
Yeah, now the only reason that this is in this segment, even though it kind of opened wide a couple weeks ago, and it opens or opened limited a couple weeks ago, and it is expanding currently. There's no major expansion this week, but it's the only thing that I've seen other than James Bond that's coming out this week.
Right.
And you didn't get a chance to see it, did you?
I didn't. I kind of wanted to be at that screening, but I forgot about it. So. Yeah. Well,
this is the thing. First of all, you have to understand it's a Charlie Kaufman movie. And if you're not familiar with Charlie Kaufman, he did Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. He did an adaptation, which to this day is my favorite one of his films. But he also, he wrote Being John Malkovich, didn't he?
Sure.
Yeah. This one was originally supposed to be directed by Spike Jonze, who did Being John Malkovich. But Charlie Kaufman stepped in to direct it. And Philip Seymour Hoffman plays this really pathetic loser of a guy who's a theater director, and he wins a fellowship to create a play. And what he does is he creates this play, and it takes him decades. And he has people playing himself, playing themselves, and playing versions of themselves. And it's sort of this look at minutiae of the world. But he builds it in this warehouse and basically builds a miniature version of New York inside a warehouse in New York. And it's just these people kind of wandering around, but then he overanalyzes his life and it warps reality. It's really, really hard to explain. What I took from it was just be yourself and live your life and do what you need to do that's right. Because when you try and be too introspective and intellectual about it, it all folds in on itself and it's this unending spiral that will just eat up your time and life. That's kind of what I took from it. And it's like Mulholland Drive, if you've seen that movie, in the sense that it is deliberately, at point, it deliberately does not make sense. You know, it's not lazy writing. It deliberately doesn't make sense. So you literally can't figure it out or relate to it in a traditional way. But I think it's done deliberately. It's just not poorly written. It's very deliberately impossible to make sense of.
Okay.
But
sounds like fun to me. I'm still going to go see it. Definitely going to go see it.
It's definitely worth checking out. I mean, I give it a kind of rocks. I don't give it a full rocks because I think Charlie Kaufman is a little bit dreary in his directing. Whereas like something like Adaptation was as depressing and as gloomy as it could be, but it still had this freshness and vibrance to it that
right.
Schenectady, New York does not have.
Right. And I think the last night I was talking to Dave Metzger and Jason Zingale from Bullseye, our good friends, and the impression that I got from them was that afterwards they kind of liked it, but it also made them want to drive their cars off the road. So, you know, that's tough. But I will say this, to Charlie Kaufman's credit, my favorite Charlie Kaufman movie of all time is one that he wrote, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. Awesome. Awesome.
Oh, yeah, he wrote that one too, didn't he? Yeah.
So there we have it. That's Charlie Kaufman. The Charlie Kaufman moment.
Woohoo.
On Fat Guys at the Movies.
About as far from James Bond as you can get.
Yes. So let's go back to James Bond and talk about the box office.
Yes.
And really, it's kind of just take your pick. How much do you think it's going to make?
Let me take a moment to say I want to thank Hollywood for not putting themselves in a situation where Happy Feet would defeat James Bond. Because that's exactly what happened last year. James Bond is Casino Royale is actually has a special note in history as one of those movies, one of the top grossing movies that never hit number one because it went up against Happy Feet. It's opening weekend and Happy Feet did so well, which was a crappy movie to begin with. I'd never liked that.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be one thing if it like went up against Finding Nemo and you're just like, wow, it's Finding Nemo. What do you expect? Yeah. But it was Happy Feet, which was a dumb movie. Academy Award or not, for shame.
Stupid George Miller.
Yeah, but I mean, it's gonna be running up against Madagascar 2, and while Madagascar 2 is not gonna win, it's still gonna rake in the dough because it's. I don't know if I mentioned this to you. No, I didn't because I saw Soul Man when I went to go see Soul Man last week because I saw it after we did the show.
Yeah.
In the theater at this time, there were four movies. I like the Lennox, which is a big movie house in Columbus, with 24 screens. Mm-hmm. Four movies were rated PG or G, and the rest were PG-13 and above.
Geez.
And even like the PG-13 movies, they're not something like, it was stuff like Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. That's PG-13, but it's not a kid's, you know, it's not like Hellboy, which you could.
Right. It was like 22 other movies and Zack and Mary.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it was the only movies that were rated G or PG were Beverly Hills Chihuahua, High School Musical 3, Madagascar, and the re-release 3D version of Nightmare Before Christmas. Nothing else out there for families. That's why Madagascar did 60 some million last weekend.
Right, and that's why it'll probably do something like, you know, 30 or 40 again this week.
Yeah, and that's why
I think
Bolt's going to just cream the box office next week, and that's why Bedtime Stories at the end of at Christmas is going to just completely clean up.
Well, I think it'll be an interesting, you know, obviously we'll talk about this next week, but between Bolt and Twilight, both are kind of that, you know, but Bolt really is for little kids.
Different audiences.
We saw it this week. I it was great. Mm-hmm. But anyways, how much do you think Quantum of Solace is going to make? I'm going to say 60 million. I'm going to say in between 50 and 60.
The reports are in the 60s. I think that's probably pretty accurate, although I could see it go a little bit higher for a couple reasons. First of all, it's a shorter movie, so you can cram a couple more screenings in there.
This is true.
And it's the only thing opening. I think what you're going to see is you're going to see huge business for Quantum of Solace, 60 million, maybe even crack 70. And then I think Madagascar 2 is going to be in the 40s. Again, it's going to be a huge week, and then everything else is going to be like less than $10 million each.
Right.
So,
there you go.
That's my prediction.
This is an easy week to predict the box office.
Easy.
So,
yeah, I really don't think The Haunting of Molly Hartley is going to come from behind and win the box office this week.
Yeah, highly doubt it. Highly doubt it. Cool. All right, time to move on to the Fat Guy 5.
Ooh,
and this is kind of an easy choice this week. We're both going to do it. Five favorite Bond movies in order. Mm. And I'll start.
Okay.
Number 5, Quantum of Solace is coming in at number 5. That's
for you.
I feel that that's pretty significant.
Okay.
What's your number 5?
Number 5 is You Only Live Twice with Sean Connery. Twice. Yeah.
Okay.
Even my with this terrible Japanese eye surgery.
my number 4 is From Russia with Love. Gotta love From Russia with Love.
Absolutely.
So
for me, number 4 would be The Spy Who Loved Me, which was Roger Moore's second film. Just a great, a fun movie. It's before he got a little too silly.
Right. My number 3 is Casino Royale, the 2006 version.
Okay.
With Daniel Craig. Because I like, you know, I just love the way they reinvented Bond as kind of a, a badass.
Okay.
So
for me, number three is For Your Eyes Only. It was the second Roger Moore movie I saw, and probably one of the best Roger Moore movies, or is the best Roger Moore movie. It's a good old fashioned Cold War mystery.
I see. All right, cool. My number two is Goldfinger. Just because.
Well, you know, right. This is the thing with Goldfinger. If you actually watch Goldfinger, he is a lousy spy in them. Everybody he runs into mm-hmm. gets killed.
Oh, yeah.
And the only thing that saves him is he's such a sexual dynamo that he turns Pussy Galore from a lesbian into a heterosexual.
Right. Which I think that is worth being at the top of the list in and of itself.
Okay. Well, for me, number two is Casino Royale, the 2006 version. The best reboot that I've ever seen of a franchise in terms of the first movie. I thought it was even better of a reboot than like Batman Begins. And Daniel Craig was such a good Bond, and this was just such an engaging Bond. I absolutely loved it.
Okay. All right.
For you?
My number one, I have to go all the way back to 1962, the first James Bond movie.
Ooh.
Dr. No is my all-time favorite James Bond. Because I'm a sucker for the original.
Uh-huh.
You know, like the Tim Burton Batman will always have a special place in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Richard Donner Superman, stuff like that. So, you know, that first Bond, Sean Connery, the very glamorous Bond, which I think is something that's been lost in these last couple of movies, is the glamour.
He was very rugged in that one, too, because there's a scene in there where he just sits and waits for a guy to show up in his hotel room and then he shoots him dead.
Right, exactly.
He takes his license to kill seriously in that movie.
He was, yeah. I mean, I think that was by far the coolest Bond movie, especially having seen it now in a very remastered version.
Mm-hmm.
It was also a very beautifully made film for 1962.
Oh, yeah.
Really incredible.
For me, for my number one, I'm actually going to just do one more away from you. I'm saying From Russia with Love has been mm-hmm. for a long time my favorite one because it's a very realistic story. It's before it gets really kind of crazy and over the top. And it's a good, solid, grounded Cold War story. And even though it has a couple little gadgets in it, it doesn't overshadow. And I think it's Dr. No, Sean Connery was still trying to find his character. By the time he did mm-hmm. From Russia with Love, he was there.
Right.
So
I agree. I'll agree with you. I think your whole list was a little bit more of the, I don't know, the old school. I like to think of myself as a new Bond fan where, you know, I saw the Brosnan movies, you know, in my teens.
Yeah.
And disliked most of them except for Goldeneye. Like, just I actually turned me off from James Bond for a while.
Really?
But then later, going back and watching, after seeing Casino Royale, going back and watching the other movies, it gave me a new appreciation for the originals.
Real quick, what's your favorite Connery film? Dr. No? Or Goldfinger?
No, Dr. No.
And then best Roger Moore film?
Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die. And then your favorite Brosnan was Goldeneye. It
was Goldeneye. Okay. Yeah.
My favorite Brosnan was Die Another Day. Brosnan.
Really? Yeah. I'm going to have to go back and watch that one again because I haven't seen it, I think, since it came out. So.
Okay.
Cool. Well, there you have it. When we come back, we're going to do a little interview action with Bruce Campbell, one of my favorite people of all time.
I thought I was your favorite person of all time.
Bruce Campbell wins. Sorry.
And here we are back at Fat Guys at the Movies, and we're in the internet-only segment. Sadly, we're not going to be doing anything too titillating in this segment.
No naughtiness.
No naughtiness. Just general shenanigans. We've got the Bruce Campbell interview coming up, but one of the things I do want to talk about, you know, we occasionally have brushed into politics when it's appropriate, and you and I don't always see eye to eye, but
well, that's because I'm a tree-hugging liberal, and you're a Bible-thumping right winger.
What does tree huggling mean? You said tree huggling. What is huggling? That sounds disgusting. You're going to get splinters in the worst place.
I have no idea.
And I wouldn't call myself a Bible thumper.
No, you're not. I'm not. You know, you're a conservative.
I like pornography way too much to be a Bible thumper. But yes, I do fall on the right side. I was not happy last week. But anyways, let's move on. Apparently, Barack Obama, in his exception speech, which I didn't watch.
Aww, lame.
Why would I care?
It was a historic moment
dude,
in the history of the United States.
I didn't watch George Bush's acceptance speech years ago. So that,
well, see, but, I get into that stuff. So I
well,
like
you
watching.
You totally
I watched,
love that.
I watched politics. McCain's speech too. I thought his speech was really good.
But, yeah. Well, but apparently Barack Obama said, "Hey, you know, to his daughters, we're going to have. I promised you a dog if I get elected." And we can now get a dog. And now there's a big discussion about what kind of breed a dog, where should he get the dog, all that kind of thing. Which, let me just say to begin with, you have to say, you know, he really put a lot on the shoulders of his daughters. I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, if you get an A on your math test, we'll get a dog. Right. But he's like, if you guys get me elected president, then you'll get a dog.
No, it was the deal was if his daughters were good during the election and allowed, you know, and were good while he and his wife were out on the campaign trail, that they would get a dog. So
I think it might have had
something to do with them winning as well. I don't know.
What's he going to get him if they don't have alcoholic meltdowns the way the Bush daughters do?
I don't know. They're only what, 6 and 10, so I don't think the alcoholic meltdowns are going to happen until he's well out of office. Even if he gets reelected,
I don't know, man. If he goes 2 terms, the 10-year-old's going to be 8. She'll be eligible for that.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows?
So they're good looking kids. They're not like Chelsea Clinton.
Right, Chelsea Clinton was rough. She's hot now.
Oh, she looks great now, but she was 13 when Clinton was elected, so she was just in the most unfortunate time in your life to be put on camera.
Exactly. But back to this dog thing. Apparently there's a movie coming out that needs publicity.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, they're tying it in. But you know what? They couldn't have picked a better time to release to do publicity for a movie about a dog.
Yeah.
Than right now, because it's an easy tie-in, I suppose.
And that would be Marley and Me, because it's coming out at Christmas, about a neurotic. It's a neurotic golden lab, I think, that somebody gets and it just it's based on a true story. It's based on a book a guy wrote.
Right.
And so there's a big push from certain sectors to say, hey, get a Marley and Me kind of dog.
Right.
Which I think what they should do, they should get the Marley and Me dog that's the size of the standees in the theaters.
Oh, sweet.
They need to get a 12-foot-tall dog.
12-foot-tall baby lab.
Yeah.
Nice.
With a Marley and Me bow, but it'd be like Clifford the Big Red Dog.
That'd be awesome.
Couldn't you see it like the shot of the White House and then the background, this giant doghouse?
Yeah, exactly. How cool would that be? I don't think that President-elect Obama should let his kids go see Bolt, because if they do, then they're going to come out of that going, screw a dog, we want a hamster.
Yes.
Because the hamster was the coolest character in Bolt. Speaking of dog movies.
Well, what they could do, they should not only get a Marley and Me dog, they need to get a very similar dog like Marley and Me, a neurotic dog, and then they could do like a reality TV show. Sort of like The Girls Next Door without the nudity.
Right.
And have it follow around the daughters with the dog and have the dog like pooping in the Lincoln bedroom and stuff like that.
How awesome is that?
That would be incredible. So anyways, I guess is there a website you can vote on this or something like that?
I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe. Hold on. Checking something here. There might be a... yeah, I don't know. You can go to marleyandmemovie.com, and I think they have some stuff there on that. But you can go to AmericanHumane.org and support the American Humane Society.
Yeah, the American Humane Society. They're doing that thing outside the White House. They're doing a big...
they're doing a dog roll, like Easter egg roll. They're just rolling dogs across the lawn.
No, they're... there's the American Humane Society is doing a big dog rescue thing outside the White House, I think, later this month.
Barack Obama has nothing to do with that.
No. They're using. Let me see. I got it here. I have the press release. I search the AHA event, it is in Washington D.C. It will be,
which is where the White House is.
Yes, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. It will be on November 11th, which was last week.
So if you get your hands on the Terminator time machine, you can go back and visit.
It appears that they already did this. So, but why did I just get the press release yesterday?
Well, that's because
I got the press release the day after.
Well, probably because it happened. But still, Marley and Me, dog for
opens, you know, yeah, opens Christmas Day. It's opening against the Spirit, so I have a feeling it's gonna do well at the box office. So,
wow.
All right, moving on to things that instead of things that are cute to things that kill people.
Like yes,
Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell. My name is Bruce. I had a chance to chat with Bruce Campbell on about his new movie, My Name is Bruce, in which he plays a version of himself, which... Yes.
He plays Bruce Campbell.
He plays Bruce Campbell, although I think it's slightly different because he like lives in a beat-up old Airstream trailer and drinks liquor out of a dog bowl, which I don't think the real Bruce Campbell lives like that.
If he does, that's awesome.
Who knows? I also don't think his ex-wife is the girl from Evil Dead. So, but she plays his ex-wife.
Fair enough.
But he's currently on a 22-city tour with this, coming to Columbus, Ohio, our hometown, my hometown at least, on November 19th, which is next week.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be showing the movie and doing Q&As and that sort of thing.
Right.
And
are we going to that screening? Do we get tickets to that?
You know what? I don't know. There might be a conflicting screening that night. I think the Four Christmases screening is that night. So, but anyways, it's about an ancient Chinese warrior who comes back from the dead, and a town kidnaps Bruce Campbell because they think he actually really kills zombies.
Right,
and they got him to go after it. And this is the movie. But here's my interview with Bruce Campbell, and then we're just going to take you out and go into wrap this show up afterwards.
My big question is, how did this actually come to you?
This one came to me as a concept by Mark Verheiden and Mike Richardson. Mm-hmm. And so they pitched the idea, and I thought it was a really fun idea, so I was all over it. And then together we kind of worked out the rough story aspect, what the tone was, what the approach was, how bad we were going to get. And then Mark wrote it, and then I sort of adapted it once it was time to make a movie.
Did you sort of like ad-lib into it in rehearsals, or did you say, hey, this crazy thing happened to me once, let's put this in?
It was all of the above. When I did a couple drafts of the script, I incorporated a lot of things that I just felt would be fun to incorporate. And so there's sequences in there where there's lines of dialogue that are verbatim, you know, with fans.
Do you think that the fans are going to be like, hey, wait, I asked him that question, and he's making
there's
going to
be someone who will wet themselves, no question about it.
What's the weirdest thing that fans have said to you or done or given you?
I tattooed the poster of Army of Darkness on his back, the entire poster on his entire back. That's pretty crazy if you ask me.
Yeah, you're immortalized now. I hope he doesn't gain weight.
Yeah, no one's putting risky business on their back.
Do you like doing the writing part of it, or was this just because it was a personal thing, being that you can kind of vent your spleen about some of the crazy...
No, I like writing. I've written a couple books now, and now worked on a couple movies, and I love the writing process. It's critical to what I do as an actor. Scenario is that if I'm directing it, then I want to get involved in the writing. It's just the bottom line, because the director, in my opinion, is involved in everything. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm an actor, like on Burn Notice, a TV show, I'll ad-lib and stuff like that and have some fun, but I'm not going to tell them how to do the show, because I'm just an actor. I'm just a hired actor. Mm-hmm. So in this case, it's a whole different ballgame. So my fingers are all over that.
Do you like that sort of end-to-end process of having to go from beginning to end as opposed to just showing up and doing a couple days?
I love it because you're more invested in it. The stakes are higher because, you're putting more into it. So I think it's great. It's more challenging and it's more rewarding.
Do you like doing the TV or movies better? Or do you see a difference anymore?
Yes. I like mixing it up. Television is fun, but after a while you go, all right, thank you, TV. I don't need to do you for a while. Mm-hmm. And you go do some, little parts in big movies or big parts in little movies.
Do you plan to do...
I like a mixed bag.
Okay. Did you plan to do some more directing coming up? I know there's some rumors that there might be My Name is Still Bruce, possibly.
Well, we've certainly joked about that, and we have the money for it, but we figure... It might be a little disingenuous for us to start the sequel before the first one has ever made any money. So we figure we'll get it out, see if it makes money, and if so, we got one ready to go.
In doing My Name is Bruce, are you at all nervous that people are going to kind of blur the line between Bruce Campbell, the actor, and the characters you play on screen? I mean, do you think people are going to think you live in a busted-out Airstream drinking whiskey from a dog's bowl?
Yeah, they are. there's going to be a certain percentage of that audience who goes, wow, what a miserable life that guy's got. And that's, you know what, for those people, I'm happy to mess with them. Because those people who can't make the distinction, they deserve to be confused because they're already confused. So, and for everybody else, we'll all just have a little chuckle.
What's the spirit on set normally for, especially this film where you're the director or even when you're just coming in as an actor for a couple days?
Most film sets are not bad. They can be very fun, but the real thing is if you have too much fun, you're not really getting work done. So my theory is you're not making friends, you're making movies. So I don't really want people chit-chatting on my set. Just shut up, do your work, and do it fast. Because it's a business, you know, and we got to get it done in a certain amount of time.
Did you do much with sets versus exterior shots?
Well, I built Western Town. I built the whole town on my property. So I now have a Western Town. So, yes, extensive set.
Well, now you're set for if you need to do another movie there.
I sure am. I got a Western Town if anybody needs one.
when did you kind of, in your course of your career, when did you kind of accept the role that you are sort of this cult movie icon? And not to mean you can't do anything outside of that, but when does it go from being annoying to being endearing or back?
It's all of the above. But it's mostly endearing because, you know, these people pay my mortgage. These are my fans are my clients. So I'm never going to really insult them. I'll dick with them in the movie because I interact with them and I actually go to conventions and I go meet these people and I do book tours and movie tours. And so I know them pretty well. I know who my fans are, so I know how to mess with them. And I'm going to do just that. It's an old Sam Raimi rule. The innocent must suffer. and jerks must be punished. So Bruce is a jerk in the movie, and he's punished.
Mm-hmm. Well, since you brought up the concept of punishing, I know I know you have a long history of getting punished in movies yourself, with as much as you go through physically in the Evil Dead movies, and and even now in watching Burn Notice, you still get smacked around quite a bit. Do you still find that enjoyable, or is that rough to do?
It's a little of both. It's harder now. I just turned 50 this year, and I blew my hamstring trying to kick a stunt guy in the face. So, you know, my rough days may be on the wane. Maybe it's time for more dialogue.
Was that during Burn Notice, or was that during...
Yeah, during Burn Notice this past season. I don't recommend it, man. That's a sucky-ass injury.
Are you finding... Do your fans kind of come in pockets? Because I know you've got Western fans from Briscoe County Jr., you got horror fans. And Burn Notice, while it's the same kind of character, it's still its own genre. Do you find that your fans are in different groups?
Burn Notice has probably the broadest audience yet because I get cops coming up to me. I get regular working stiffs coming up to me. These are not guys who are into horror movies at all. This is the most kind of normal audience I think I've ever had. Other than Briscoe, but Briscoe was short-lived. Briscoe was not a successful show, really. It lived on in cult status, and I think the DVD sold pretty well, but Jack of All Trades was not a success either. So the difference is that this is finally a successful show that has nothing to do with anything else that I've done. And it's fun. It's good to finally get some guy come up and going, man, you didn't hear that Burn Notice, aren't you? And these are people who don't even know I was in Evil Dead.
What are we going to see? Is it just going to show the movie? You're going to do Q&A? What kind of things happen?
Yeah, I'm going to intro it, then we'll show the movie. Afterwards, the four people that are still in the audience, I'll do a Q&A with them. and we'll have some fun.
Okay.
And then I'll get the hell out of there.
I noticed in watching the movie, and it kicks off straight to an R rating, at least in my opinion, with decapitations and everything. You had no question, you were never going to try and make this a PG-13 movie, correct?
No, because in my opinion, and I'll say this unequivocally, there's no such thing as a PG-13 horror movie. I mean, seriously, if you show me a PG-13 horror movie, I'll show you a sellout.
Yeah. Well, Hollywood would disagree with you, apparently, if you look at the trends.
And the reason why they do that is so they can get 10 to 20 more million at the box office. Hmm. I don't want it. I don't need 10 or 20 million. I need like 2 million, you know? Mm-hmm. So as a result, I'm not going to make the movie for just anybody. And I didn't make the movie for kids.
Yeah.
I don't really want 14-year-olds to watch this movie.
Well, there's a lot of, there's so much pretext with your other movies that they shouldn't be watching at that age anyways, really.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah. So, you know, to me it was always an R-rated movie. Because, look, there's a lot of F-bombs, there's boo-boo words, there's a lot of just stuff that kids don't necessarily need to be exposed to. A lot of bad behavior.
Is this just getting a limited run in the just in the cities that it's showing, or is it going to be rolled out to other theaters outside of where the tour's coming?
It all depends on how well it does.
Okay.
They'll try a few venues without me showing up, and if people still show up without me showing up, then that's a good sign.
What's next on the horizon for you after this?
Season 3 of Burn Notice. I go right back to work in March.
What's your favorite film that you've done so far?
I don't have a favorite because I'm not done. Okay. I can give you a top 5.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bubba Hotep. I'm a big fan of the Evil Dead movies, obviously. I have no ill will toward those movies at all. I have nothing but warm, fuzzy feelings. a little movie called Running Time is a cool movie.
Mm-hmm.
That is underviewed, sort of not really fully appreciated. I don't know, other little some TV things I enjoy.
For fans, or rather filmmakers out there who would like to kidnap you and take you to their own little Western town, what does it really take to get Bruce Campbell into a movie these days?
A director with experience. I now have an official first-time director rule. That's an instant no.
Okay.
So you got to have experience, and it can't have zombie in the title or in the movie. That's an instant no.
Uh-huh.
Anything zombies is just an immediate walk away. It has to be something that makes me nervous when I read it.
Nervous in a good way.
Absolutely.
This is like
Bubba Hotep.
Yeah.
Made me really nervous because I went, this is a special little movie.
Well, Bruce, thanks so much for giving some time to talk to us.
And Al, thanks for your time as well. I'll talk to you for the sequel.
Absolutely. Good luck with the tour.
Thank you very much.
And we're wrapping you up here on Fat Guys the Movies. We're done with our Bond episode.
It's
kind of sad for me because I like talking about Bond because I feel like I know a lot more about James Bond than I do about a lot of other characters.
Well, there were 20 some movies. Well, we're now in 22, and if you don't even count the non-canon stuff, so
right.
There's all these box sets. I've got for some reason I got half of the box sets of the old movies.
you have half of each one of them?
No, I've when Casino Royale came out 2 years ago, they MGM re-released all the Bond movies in 4 box sets, and for some reason,
I remember that.
Yeah, and for some reason, they only sent me numbers 3 and 4, but they're all they're all out of order too. So I got like a sampling of each one, although I don't have any of the Timothy Daltons. Go figure.
All right, cool. Well, it's time to do our DVD roundup. And we'll start with Kevin's pick. What's your pick of the week?
My pick is Hellboy 2, The Golden Army. Now, I know you weren't a huge fan of this movie. I enjoyed it. I thought it was comparable to the first one. Lots of fun. Mm-hmm. I actually had a chance to, at the Mid-Ohio Con, do an interview, a live interview in front of the audience with Doug Jones, who plays Abe Sapien. And he had some tremendous stories. That guy's a hoot, by the way. He's a brilliant guy, and he plays a whole bunch of different characters, not just Abe Sapien, but he does like the Angel of Death and the Chamberlain in this
right.
is Guillermo del Toro's follow-up to Pan's Labyrinth. Very, very, very stylized. What's great about this DVD, get the 3-disc set, and it has it has one of the discs is for digital copy. Now they're advertising 3 discs, but the one of them is just for digital copy.
It's still only 2 discs.
Yeah, it's really only 2 discs of stuff. But like the first disc has like the movie and some deleted scenes and some and a commentary and a little bit of like a tour of a set. The next disc literally has more. You will spend more time watching the documentary they have on the second disc than you would watching the first movie, the original movie.
Oh, totally. They have the same thing on the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I got the Blu-ray, and it was I think I enjoyed the movie based on the special features even more than when I saw it in theaters.
There's a 2.5-hour documentary about how they made the movie from like all the way to the beginning and end. And you get to see like why Guillermo del Toro is probably the coolest guy to work with.
Oh, totally.
Because he's like a kid with Legos just running around.
Yep. Only he's got huge monsters and creatures.
Yeah. But he has like, cool he starts crap. Off with this production meeting where he has everyone just sitting in a hallway. They don't even have like a, they're just in a hallway, like in his apartment building or something.
Nice. So. Well, my pick this week is Kung Fu Panda.
Hi-ya!
I'm going to recommend, if you've got Blu-ray, get it on Blu-ray, but it's also got a 2-disc special edition, I believe. Right?
Well, it comes, it's a single disc.
Single disc, and it's got Secrets of the Furious 5.
Yeah, it comes packaged with the second disc, which it's a half-hour sort of like TV show size movie that tells sort of like the background of the five the five characters. Am I boring you?
No, sorry. I don't know where that came from. But no, I loved Kung Fu Panda. It's actually still one of my favorite movies of the year, though I did get a chance to watch WALL-E again this week, and I'm really so torn on what my favorite animated movie is going to be this year.
Yeah, there's a big smackdown right now. People are going to the mat debating on Kung Fu Panda versus WALL-E, which I got to throw down for WALL-E. Loved WALL-E.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you know, that's a fight for another day. For now, Kung Fu Panda comes out this week. WALL-E comes out next week, so you can get both and have a week's worth of each.
Yeah.
So there you go. So stinker of the week. This one looks interesting.
Yeah, JFK Even More Editions. There's like JFK Special Edition and Ultimate Collector's Edition. Yeah. And when I saw that, I'm like, I'm all for extra features and stuff like that. But for crying out loud, the election's over. Will you quit it with the damn presidential biopics, Oliver Stone? We
all
get it.
They just re-released Nixon on Blu-ray as well.
Yeah, they released Nixon. It's like the even longer edition, which is like something like 3.5 hours.
I took a full nap during Nixon, woke up, and it still wasn't over.
Yeah, that's...
And, like, we're talking full nap, like almost full sleep.
A completely unnecessary movie. Nixon, JFK. I mean, JFK was a decent movie, but come on. You could tell it's like Oliver Stone saying, we need to promote my movies, and we're not going to get another chance for 4 more years. So let's do it now.
Nice. And two other ones that I wanted to mention just quickly was Chuck Season 1 on Blu-ray, which if you don't have Chuck Season 1, go get it. It doesn't necessarily have to be on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
It just gives me an opportunity to remind you that Chuck came out. Yeah. And The Sopranos, the complete series of The Sopranos.
That's right.
Just came out this week.
So if you can hear in the background, there's a phone coming into my phone call coming into my side of the magical virtual studio in the sky.
Fantastic news.
Yes, but...
All right, cool. So moving on, time to kind of recap our reviews. This should be an easy one. First, we had Schenectady, New York, which was... you saw it, and what'd you say about that one?
Oh, that one's a kind of rocks. It's not a full-on rocks, just because it's a little bit off-kilter.
Right, right. And we'll complete the James Bond love fest.
Yes.
And by saying, I would rate Quantum of Solace as totally rocks.
I'm totally rocks on Quantum of Solace as well.
Sweet. And next week we've got another kind of special show. We'll have a special guest, I believe, in the virtual magical studio in the sky, from Film School Rejects, Cole Abias.
Abias,
our resident Twi guy, our Twilight expert, to discuss Twilight. We've also got Bolt coming out.
Yes,
and I think aren't we going to talk about Transporter 3 next week as well?
No, you know what? I double checked the production, the release schedule. That comes out on Thanksgiving to go up against Australia.
Australia.
I still don't think they're done editing that one yet.
Nope, not done at all. So we got Twilight and Bolt. In between now and then, if you'd like to get in touch with us, fatguysthemovies.com. Hit us on iTunes. Make sure you give us a little review on iTunes, good or bad. We just like to hear what you have to say. Email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. Give us a call, 614-388-8735. Kevin, until we meet again.
I'm Caw. Kevin Caw. That was pathetic.